welcome to another episode of GT Radio. Man, I've been looking forward to this show all week because Carter Pavey is such a charismatic guy, and he's a smart person. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
So you grew up in Middle America in a small town in Michigan, right? Tell us a little bit about growing up and your family and all that.
Yeah, I grew up in northern Michigan, a small town called Grayling. It was your classic, I guess, you know, small Midwest town. My dad was he built log cabins, and through his life, he was going in and out of alcoholism and had problems with that addiction, and so it caused, you know, it was a bit of a rough life. And you know, the one thing that it taught me though was, I don't want this for my life. I want more. So, you know, I made a conscious effort when I was a little kid, and I said, I'm going to do more. So applied myself at school and, you know, decided I wanted to go to college. I was the first kid in the family to go to college. So I went to college, paid for it myself, went to Michigan State University. I made a real conscious decision to say, I want more. I mean, my dad, he gave me everything he could, but you know, there was always, you know, it was a tough life. He tried his best, and I wanted to make sure that I was able to provide my family with everything they wanted, and not ever have a time where, you know, there was a lack of wanting, or, you know, they didn't, I was able to give them everything they needed, I guess.
Yeah. Carter, what are the things that, you know, the conversations we've had that I really love about, you know, some of the things that you say, is you always have a saying for something. And I know that the saying, how can we do better every day, is something that I think resonates with me because that's the way I think too. Let me ask you, not everybody has that vision to say, I don't want this for my life. I want to make a better life. Where do you think that comes from? Is that something you're born with, or is that something that, you know, you develop? Why is it that you had that and let's say another person didn't? What drives that?
It's hard to say because, you know, my brother and I are 3 years apart, and we all had the same opportunities, right? We were living up in the same household. Everything was the same. And he's living a very similar life to what we grew up to. I think it was just you, and statistically, I should have been in that same boat, but I guess I broke the mold statistically. And I made that conscious decision that I didn't want this. I didn't want to grow up being a smoker. I didn't want to grow up, you know, living paycheck to paycheck and scrounging for, you know, how am I going to pay for the next meal for the kids. And, you know, I didn't want that. So I think part of it is you're born with it. You know, it comes down to your work ethic. So, you know, you're born with a certain work ethic, I believe. And the rest is, you know, you're instilled with it, and it's a learned trait. And my dad, you know, while he had his challenges, he had a hard work ethic. I mean, he busted his hump for everything that we did have, so the work ethic is definitely something that I think you need. And I applied that work ethic to, you know, instead of looking at paycheck to paycheck, I applied it to, all right, you know, long term. Let's play the long term goal here and work towards the future. And at the time when I was little, that applied to, you know, I got to have good grades. If I want to get into a good school, I need to have good grades. And if I have to have good grades, that means I'm gonna have to do my homework. I'm gonna have to do this. I'm gonna have to, you know, keep my nose above water, and you know, don't fall into the trap of a lot of high schools going to parties and all that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah. So you even though your dad and your family were living paycheck to paycheck, you saw this work ethic that he had, and the work he was doing wasn't easy. You were telling me he was carrying logs on his shoulder, and it wasn't easy work.
Yeah, carrying logs on his shoulders. He's building log homes from hand for people, and you know, and working for companies who maybe didn't have the best OSHA regulations, and you know, a lot of injuries, and you know, I saw the physical toll it took on him. From just a physical standpoint, I mean, he had cuts and scrapes. His arm got caught in a log peeler when I was little, and mangled his arm to, I mean, it's completely shredded and scarred. And you know, that's not the stuff I wanted for myself. I mean, I wanted, like I said, I wanted more. So I made that conscious decision, And I said, all right, I've got to find myself. And I took that lesson, you know, throughout my entire career. I've always said, all right, I want more. You know, now it's, I want more EBITDA. I want more coin in, but, so I've taken that lesson and kind of applied it throughout my entire life.
Yeah. So even though, like we were talking about, even though it was like paycheck to paycheck and it was a struggle, you still saw your dad working hard, getting injured, you know, having a good work ethic, right? That stuck with you.
Yeah, it absolutely did. I mean, you know, that's when I first moved out to Vegas, you know, I thought for sure, like, you know, everyone worked as hard as I did. And I quickly realized that that's not necessarily the case. You know, a lot of people, you know, show up and come to work, get their paycheck and go home. Right. And I was like, you know, I want more. And I remember a story when I was working, you know, early in my career, you know, I thought, you know, I'm 22 years old and I've got a full-time job. I'm living in Las Vegas. You know, my first paycheck is what my dad made like in a month and a half, you know? So I'm like, I'm made, right? I've made it. And I remember, so, you know, I was a salaried team member. So I'd come to work at 10 o'clock and, you know, I'd get my job done. And by 3 o'clock, I'm playing games on Yahoo and you know, thinking that I'm done. Like I've made it, right? And I remember my general manager came up. She's like, what are you doing? I said, what do you mean, what am I doing? She's like, well, I need this report. And you're slacking off, you're goofing off. I was like, the report's on your desk. Well, I need this post form. It's on your desk. I need this. I was like, I gave it to you yesterday. Check your inbox, yada, yada, yada. And so she was like, you know what? Just go do something else. Go work the front desk. So I said, okay, fine. So, you know, I'd do my job in a very timely and efficient manner, working, you know, 3-4 hours a day, doing my actual job in marketing, you know, outside of promotions and giveaways and stuff. But, and then I went and I learned the front desk, and then I followed slots around and followed the reward center around and just kind of, you know, it was a good lesson for me to kind of, to reinforce the lesson I learned growing up, that there's always more, right? You can learn, there's always more you can do. You can always learn more. You can always apply yourself more. So, you know, the lesson that my dad taught me of, you know, inadvertently saying, you know, don't settle for this and strive for more, was kind of reinforced throughout my career through different mentors and leadership I had.
Yeah, it's great stuff. Now, you have the funniest story about how you ended up in Vegas. Tell us about that. This is great stuff.
Yeah, so
you got to tell
us. I just graduated from Michigan State University, and you know, all of my buddies, we were all out at the different bars, you know, living that college life. You didn't really have a care in the world, and we're at the bar having some drinks, and friends are telling me that they're moving, you know, they're moving to Kentucky, and they're moving to Atlanta, and they're moving to Denver, and they're moving to Minnesota, and you know, everyone's kind of rattling off where they're going and all these jobs they had. And well, I didn't really have a job lined up yet, and I guess I told everyone I was moving to Las Vegas. And the next day, everyone's like, man, I can't believe you're moving to Las Vegas. Like, what are you going to do down there? I'm like, I'm sorry, come again? What'd you say? And they said, well, last night you told us you're moving to Las Vegas. And I was like, oh yeah, no. Yeah, I'm totally moving to Las Vegas. Yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but man, it's going to be great. I'm going to move to Las Vegas. It's going to be great. So, I mean, in a nutshell, I moved to Vegas and started my career because I didn't want to look like an idiot in front of my friends.
I remember a couple more details. You actually borrowed money from your grandma, right?
Yeah,
or something like that, right?
The car I had wasn't going to make it out of the parking lot, so I had to borrow money from my grandma, and I bought a car that would drive me across country. And then when I moved across country, I'd never been to Vegas in my life. I mean, to me, I was the quintessential. You know, I've seen a couple movies, and I thought Las Vegas was the Strip, and that was it. So I had no idea what I was getting into when I moved out there. I moved out there, realized Vegas was a heck of a lot bigger than I thought. Had no idea where I was going to live. So I slept in my car in the TI parking lot or in the parking garage for a couple of days until I ran into, I found out a friend of mine, her uncle lived out there. So she put me in contact with him and you know, built a relationship with him, and he kind of helped me find a place to live. And And then about a month and a half went by, still didn't have a job. And I was having lunch with him at Santa Fe Station. And he said, "You got a job yet?" And I go, "No, I still don't have a job. I'm still looking." He goes, "Hold on a second." He made a phone call, and the director of marketing came down. He goes, "This is my friend Carter. He needs a job." And a week later, I got a job, and I was working at Fiesta Rancho. It was my first property.
That's amazing. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you started your first property and you got into it, what were your feelings about what you were doing? I mean, this was the first time that you had, you know, done this, and you had come from the small town and your dad, the log building and all that stuff. What did you think when you started? What was going through your mind?
I thought it was the craziest thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, it was exciting. It was hectic. You know, a lot of it, I was like, I'm faking it until I make it right now. So it was a cool experience. You know, it was, I really jumped in head first. And, you know, doing the promotions is what I started doing, the drawings and coming up with all those concepts. And I really gravitated towards the actual emceeing of the drawings. And so I started doing that. And that was right around the time, probably a year later, Bob Barker from The Price is Right retired. And I went as far as I sent a demo tape of me doing some of the drawings and announcing and emceeing the events and all that stuff to The Price is Right. And letting them
know
that, you know, I wanted to apply. And, you know, oddly enough, I got a letter back from them. The letter says, "We don't know who you are, so we're not going to consider you," but I got a letter back from The Price is Right.
One thing that struck me, you know, with the conversations that we had is that you're fearless. And I think this is something that I've heard from other people who have started at the bottom and most people I've interviewed started at the bottom, worked their way up. Talk a little bit about fearlessness.
Yeah, I think you really need to. I mean, none of us are experts, right? No one's an expert. And the best thing that you can do, and I try to teach this to my team, the best thing you can do is fail, right? Try it and fail. You know, there's not too many things that you can fail at that are going to get you fired. You know, so it's trial by error. It's continuing to try and learning from those mistakes, I think, is what's most important. So yeah, I mean, being fearless in the industry is, you know, being willing to take a risk, you know, calculate a risk, but taking a risk, it's being, you know, willing and ready to take on, you know, be the first in the market to do, you know, X, Y, or Z. But you can't, I don't think you can be, if you're timid and you sit back and you're waiting for what the competition is going to do, to say, "All right, I'll follow through." I don't think that's not going to advance you. Now you're following the leader. You're not being the leader.
Exactly. You have to take risks and you have to be able to fail, because that's the biggest lessons that you're going to learn. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You spent quite a bit of time at Santa Fe Station, and I think a lot of you got some hardcore training there, because you were on the strip. Things were a little bit different back then. And I think out of this came a lot of stuff that you talk about now and some of the sayings that you have. Talk a little bit about these concepts and the sayings that you have.
Yeah, I mean, so my time with stations was a great time. And I learned a lot from them. You know, being in that Las Vegas strip, non-strip market, you gotta be competitive. You know, you got a casino in the gas station. You got a casino at the grocery store. You got a casino, you know, next door to you. You got to be competitive. So, you know, being competitive with them, I think is you really got to be competitive. And you know, now in my career, I'm in Law, Michigan. I'm working at Gun Lake Casino right now. You know, our closest competitor is what, an hour away maybe. But you know, I don't really view them as our competitor. You know, I view our competitor is what did we do same time frame last year? What did we do same time frame last month? What did we do yesterday? And it's really putting yourself up against yourself is the best way to really, in my opinion, to drive your fire, I guess. It's how do you constantly beat your prior day's business? How do you top the promotion you did last month?
Basically competing against yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How can we do better every day, right?
Yeah. You know, but one of the you know, going back to your earlier question about one of the lessons I've learned, you know, I've learned over my 15 plus year career that everyone works for marketing. I feel that that's a, and
by the way, I love that
team members, and
I love that thing.
Yeah. When I meet new team members and, you know, during their orientation process, that's what I tell them. I go, ultimately, I'm here for you. Marketing is a resource for the property where if you got questions, let us know. We'll be happy to assist. But at the end of the day, you all work for me. And I say that because regardless of your position, it's everyone's job. We're in the hospitality industry, the hospitality business. And I think that a lot of people, the guest service standards or making sure the guest is taken care of and that they're entertained as a marketing function. But I don't care if you're, regardless of your department, you're working for marketing. Your job is to make sure the guests are entertained, that they're having a good time, because that's part of the hospitality business. Guests have choices with their money to go anywhere. And ultimately when they choose your property, you got to make sure they're choosing your property and that they want to come back. And to do that, you've got to provide that value. I think guests they're aware that, they're not going to walk into the casino and win money every single time. They know that's not going to happen. But what value are they going to get out of that? Are they going to be entertained and leave saying, I had a good time? And that requires any interaction they have with any team member on property. You have to make sure they have a good time. So whether it's security when they walk in the front door, make sure they have a good time. It's slot GSAs, make sure they have a good interaction with you when you're getting them a player's card or paying them a jackpot or whatever the case may be. Make sure they're having a good time and you're keeping them entertained.
So it doesn't matter what position. How about the security guard? I mean, how does he work for marketing?
Yeah, I mean, the security guard, I mean, that's the, in many properties, that's the first person, that works for the casino that the guest sees when they walk in the door is that security officer. I equate it to if you walk into anywhere and the first person you see that works there has their arm crossed and they're scowling and they don't say hello and they look like a classic bouncer, you're not going to feel safe. You're not going to feel comfortable. You're not going to feel warm and welcome and inviting. So, if that's the attitude and the mentality of a security officer, then I'm not coming back. I'm not getting that good vibe. But if I walk up there and they greet me and they say hello, they ask me how my day is, they're able to provide any questions and assistance that I have. To me, that is, that's selling the experience. That's the first person I saw. And if that's the first person I saw, boy, I'm excited to see the rest of the people that I'm going to interact with. And oftentimes the security officer is also the last person, right? That's the last person they see. They're at the door, they're greeting you at the door, and then they're greeting you on the way back. So, not only what's the old adage, the first impression and the last impression are the most important ones. I mean, the security officer has the first impression and the last impression in many instances with the guest. So it's extremely important that they're providing that friendly, upbeat, positive interaction with the guest.
I love that. I really, really love that. It's something that I haven't heard before and very unique, but coming from you, I expect something innovative like that. Talk a little bit about the happy team thing. Maybe you're saying happy.
Yeah, I mean,
team
my and, yeah, what, my whole philosophy about? Is the whole happy team is there's to me you break down business into pretty simple. It's a pretty simple business plan. If you have a happy team, they're going to take care of your guests who will be happy, and your guests are going to end up taking care of you, right? So it all starts if you can have a happy and upbeat and team and you're giving them what they need, right? Giving their pencil, I like to say. If they need a pencil, get them a pencil. If they need a stapler, get them a stapler. All those small things, the tools that they need to do their job. Treat them with respect. Be open and transparent with them. Communicate with them. Don't let them get caught off guard don't make sure that they're aware of what's going on and they're involved in the process. If you can create that dynamic with your team members and they'll be happy, they're engaged, they're then going to take care of you naturally. I mean, you don't even have to force it at that point in time. They're going to take care of the guests. And when the guests are taken care of, the guests feel comfortable, they feel relaxed, they want to come back, thus they're going to spend more money with you.
So happy team, and the happy team, if they're happy, they're working for marketing, and they're happy marketers, is what you're saying.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's going to translate into people that are hospitable, and we're in the hospitality business.
Yeah. And again, I think people often forget we're in the hospitality business. You know, we're not in the casino business.
Yeah.
We're not in the we're not in the food and beverage business. We're in the hospitality business.
No.
And people are coming here
yeah.
to have a good time. And you've got to make sure, you know, whether it's a poker room or table games or a slot machine or a hotel or a restaurant, you know, you got to treat them like it's your house. They're in your house. Treat them with respect, treat them with dignity, you know, make sure they're having that good time and going the next, do you need a water? You know, can I get you anything? Are you comfortable? You know, and just making sure that they have those basic, you know, hospitable needs and they'll come back.
Yeah, it's really simple, but very effective. Talk, you know, the job at Gun Lake, you were tenacious about this. You told me a story about sending the notes to them every 6 months for six to 7 years.
Yes.
Tell us about that story. I love this story.
Yeah, I moved out. So you heard I moved out to Vegas. You know, I got drunk and didn't want to look like an idiot, so I moved out to Vegas. But ultimately, you know, I'm Michigan is my home. I mean, that's my home state. I love the state. So I ultimately wanted to come back. And, you know, so I moved out in 04, and I don't know, probably 3 or 4 months into my job there, I heard that that Station Casinos was working with a tribe back in Michigan. And I said, oh, boy, that'd be great, right? I got a job. I'm starting to learn the industry. Boy, it'd be wonderful. I could go back and you know, essentially work for the same company and have a job in Michigan. Because at that time, you know, the Michigan market wasn't what it is today. I mean, it was a tough market. So I found out that we were doing this project, and I found out who was in charge of it, and I shot him an email on a whim. Never met the guy before. He was a senior vice president, and I was a coordinator, an entry-level, you know, salary position. Shot the senior vice president an email saying, you don't know me. I understand we're working on a deal with a tribe in Michigan. I would love to be part of it. You know, didn't hear anything on that email. 6 months later, shot another email. 6 months later, shot an email. For 6 or 7 years, I shot this guy an email. Never heard from him. Never heard back from him. And then I finally did hear back from him. He said, let's talk. So at this time, I just got promoted to a director. I was over at Fiesta Henderson. I was at Fiesta Henderson. So I went and I met with the guy, and he said, you know what? You know, you're from Michigan. That's respectable. And, you know, you've been with the company for a while now. He's like, you know, maybe I'll bring you on as my marketing manager. So I left that meeting. I'm like, marketing manager? Are you kidding me? You know, I've got that ego. I'm like, I am a director. You know, I've been a director all 2 minutes. You know, I'm a director. So I said, no, that's not good enough. So I emailed the COO of the company. And I said, hey, you know, I understand the project's underway. It's starting to move faster now. I really want to be a part of this. I want to come out as the director of marketing. And he shot me a note back and said, that's wonderful. What would your marketing plan be? Put together a marketing plan. In a whole proposal of what you'd want to do if it's a, you know, it's a brand new market for us and they don't have a players club. So, you know, knowing the market, I put together this pretty extensive presentation, and I said, it's all done. When do you want to meet? He said, well, come to my office tomorrow at the corporate office and we'll review it. So I went to his office and I presented it to him. He said, this is great. You're booked on a flight tomorrow to San Diego to go present this to the tribe.
Wow.
So, come again? Yeah, so I went and presented it to the tribe.
Wow.
I think 3 months later, I was packing up and moving to Michigan.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is you have to be tenacious, you got to be fearless, and nothing should be beyond your reach, right? You shouldn't think that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That anything should be
beyond. You got to shoot for the stars. I mean, you got to. And it sounds cliche, right? But if you want it, you got to make sure you've got to make sure those that work for you and those that work above you are aware of what you want. What are your goals? What are your aspirations?
Yeah.
Make sure they're aware of it, because they can help you. They can help you. And if they don't know, how are they supposed to help you? You gotta be fearless though. And you know, as a guy who's never stepped foot in the casino to say, you know, go to a senior vice president and say, hey, I want this job. What do I got to do? And then be consistent with that message over the years. And I think that really helped position me into good graces with my senior level leadership throughout the organization and all the different properties I worked at, and being speak my mind. You know, that's one thing. I might not always be right, but everyone knows where I stand and how I stand because I speak my mind and I, you know, and I make sure everyone's aware. End of the day, you got to go with, you know, you got to go with the play that's called, but, you know, you should always make sure people are aware that, not all people, but, you know, your senior level leadership, you know, whether you agree or you don't agree, at least make it be known. At the end of the day, run the play as the play is being called, but, you know, should always provide your insight. And that's hard for a lot of people, right? And they don't want to,
yeah.
They can be viewed as, you know, going against the grain as a troublemaker or, you know, you just got to do it in a professional manner, professional setting. And, but at the end of the day, they may know you're against it, but as long as you execute it to perfection the way they want it, they'll never question you.
Carter, people always talk about shifting demographics, right? And how the, you know, the players are getting older, they're dying off. We got the millennials coming up. Everybody's talking about, you know, how do we attract them, the new generation, the old. How do you deal with the shifting demographics of our business?
Boy, this is the million-dollar question, right?
Yep.
If anyone in the industry had the answer, I think the industry would be in a very different place. But it's when you're looking at it, it's the shifting demographic. You've got the older generation is moving out, and you got the younger generation coming in. I think that younger generation is looking for that experience. Like they might not be big gamers, but they're looking for that experience. Food and beverage, nightlife. You know, there's a lot of new games out there that kind of create that kind of skill for play type mentality. But they're looking for that experience. And at the end of the day, if you can go back to having the good guest service and making your property hospitable, that's the experience. That's what they're looking for. They want to. Am I being treated well? Am I getting good value? That's what they're looking for. So, you know, they may not be gaming today, but they'll get there. You just got to create that experience and that being that warm and welcoming. And in the meantime, you got to, you know, it's tough. You got to, while you're focusing on the younger generation and creating that experience that they want, you also have to take care of the older generation who are, you know, playing the slot machines. They have that more disposable income and, it's a balancing act, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's the million-dollar question, right? That's what everybody's talking about. You know, we got a lot of expansion, a lot of renovations, a lot of things being added to casinos that are making them more and more like resorts all across the country. What's going to happen in 5 years when this is all completed, all these new casinos have been built, there's more competition? What's going to happen?
I think it's going to come down to, I mean, when you look at it, right? So at the end of the day, when you look at a casino, they have slot machines, they have table games, they have food and beverage. Concepts might be different. Menus might be different. You know, some have hotels, you got concert halls, all of these amenities. There's nothing unique to any property. There's nothing unique because someone else has an attraction similar, if not the same. You know, it may be branded differently, a different name, but it's there. It's really going to come down to, again, going back to that guest experience. How do the guests feel when they walk in your building? You know, again, guests are smart. They're not expecting to come into the casino with $100 and walk away with $100,000. That's not the mentality of the guest. They're looking for that entertainment value. Am I going to be able to get a couple hours of entertainment? And that's not necessarily just playtime. But am I able to get a couple hours of entertainment for my $100? That's what they're looking for. So providing that up front with your frontline team members, I think that's what's going to separate you from the competition. And it's not the amenities. It's not the offers. It's not any of that. That'll help short term, but long term, it's going to go back to, is property A giving me that consistent experience over property B and C?
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody works for marketing. Love that.
Yeah, everyone works for marketing. That's right.
Everybody works for marketing. The young people coming up into the business, what can you tell them that will serve them well throughout their entire careers?
Ask questions. I mean, always ask questions. None of us are experts. You know, even the senior level people, they're not experts. They're the best thing you can do is ask questions, learn from your mistakes, take chances, take risks. And then really, as you move up your career, hire people smarter than you. You know, get people who are, you know, again, no one's an expert, but get people who are more of an expert in advertising or slots or tables than you are. Get those smarter people and hire them, because you're going to learn from them. You know, just because you may be over them doesn't mean you can't learn from them. But ask questions.
Yeah.
You've always got to ask questions. I mean, I'm constantly asking questions, you know, because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, you don't know what you don't know. That's right. Yeah, it's great, great stuff. Let's take some calls, okay? This has been really great. Thank you so much. Hang on one sec. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Carter Pavey on the line. Do you have a question for him?
Hi, this is JV from Playersoft, Jatana Ziegler. How are you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, JV. How are you? Good to hear you.
Great. I love the interview. And Carter, you're absolutely right when you say the experience is about, or everything comes from the experience of, you know, what you're providing, because everybody does have the same machines. Everybody does have those same amenities, but it's who you hire, and you hit the nail right on the head. So my question for you right now is, I find that working in the gaming world is just as addictive as a player coming into the gaming world. What is it about gaming, Carter, that keeps you motivated and coming in every day and making yourself from a marketing coordinator now to an AGM of a property? Was it working out on the strip, you know, grinding when you first started, or was it presenting in front of the tribe your marketing plan? What was it that, like, motivates you to come in every day?
No, you know, Tina and I were talking about this earlier. It comes down to every day is different. You know, I've got buddies in various other industries who, you know, Monday is Monday, Tuesday is Tuesday, Wednesday is Wednesday, Thursday is Thursday, Friday is Friday. They know that going in, they go to their weekend, and they know the next week is going to be the exact same week. You know, whereas our industry, it's different. There's never a same day. Everything's always different. There's new challenges to face. You know, there's that everything's different, right? You never have that mundane day, that mundane week. And I think the other thing is it's just that challenge, right? That challenge and that drive to say, you know, how do we do better than last year? How do we do better than last month? How do we do better than last week? And really, you know, being competitive with yourself, you know, not being competitive with the casino across the street, not being competitive with the casino down the road, be competitive with yourself and beat yourself, and use that as your benchmark, not what's happening down the road. You know, benchmark against yourself and strive to be better than you were yesterday.
Well, that's great. That's exactly how I felt when I was looking for a job. My original background was from the hotel industry, and then when the casinos started popping up in the Midwest, that was the very first question that I asked myself was, where am I going to go where I can do the same thing but it'd be different every day? And that was my immediate thought was, oh, let me go to the gaming world and, you know, and just kind of built myself up from there. So I'm glad that we share that same experience. And thank you so much for letting me ask the question and be a part of the show today.
Oh, no problem. Call in anytime. That was a great question. Really appreciate it.
Great. Thank you guys
thank
so
you.
Much.
Have a nice night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Too.
Okay. Let's get another question here. Good question. Hello, this is GT Radio, Tino Magnetta. I have Carter Pavey. Do you have a question for him?
Hi, Tino. Hi, it's Luigi. Thank you for taking my call.
Hey, Luigi, how are you?
Really good, thank you. Hi, Carter.
How you doing?
Really good. I wanted to I'm enjoying the interview, first of all. I think it's very interesting, especially the culture of happiness. I love that for your operation. Where in Michigan are you from? I may have missed that.
I'm originally from Grayling, Michigan, which is about an hour south of the Mackinac Bridge.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm from Michigan myself. I just wondered, you know, what area you're from. Mount Clemens is where
yep.
I'm from. And
okay, yeah. Yep.
So
I know you've transitioned from stations to the tribal world. Did you find it, or do you still find it difficult to present your ideas and sell your ideas to the tribe when you need to get something done, or is it a smooth process?
No, you know, it's a very similar process. I mean, I go out there and if I have an idea, I present it. I say, are you free? Let's talk. And I throw it out there. I mean, I don't, and it's not out of disrespect, but I go straight to the source. If you're going to be making the decision, I'm going to go talk to you. I'm not going to go through the channels. And I mean, I always keep my superiors in the loop, you know, but I'm a firm believer of, you know, you got to step out on that branch and you got to make that challenge. So it's actually been fantastic working with the tribe here. They're very open and receptive, this is their first casino. So they're in that boat of, they ask great questions. They want to learn, so they're open and willing when I present. And I'm a firm believer, if you can present a solid case and you can present some supporting figures and facts behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it makes sense, it makes sense. And if it doesn't,
true.
You know, I'm not one to say, all right, well, I got to go sit in the corner now because my pride is hurt. It's all right. What do I got to do to make this so it does make more sense, right? How do I tweak this and edit this and represent it to be better than it was?
And once it's sold and they all have consensus, do they execute quickly, or is there a waiting period?
No, I mean, they're pretty good at getting things executed pretty quickly. I mean, if it makes sense, it'll make sense. And what I've experienced a lot over, you know, whether it was with stations or in Indian country, is a lot of people will present ideas and it's almost in passing, you know, hey, Luigi, let's do this. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not selling anything there, you know? So what I do is I say, hey, Luigi, you got time? Let's have lunch. Let's have a meeting. And then here's charts and graphs and, you know, supporting data that justifies why some people like all that stuff. The other people don't. But you've got to have, you know, you got to know your audience, I guess.
Right. And have your plan thought out and written, documented. Yes, of course.
Okay. Another question I had for you is basically where we were talking about, Gen X, Gen Z and the millennials and how they're gaming and how that whole world is changing, because we, on one hand, we have to pay attention to the baby boomers because they have most of the money right now, but that's slowly fading away and it's transitioning over to the other generation. So social media and virtual gaming, is that a part of your operation and monitoring the social media as well as any type of virtual gaming and sports betting and all that for the future?
We've got the Play for Fun Casino and we've got the social media, and we're pretty active involved in both of those. And it's providing, you know, relevant content that the players want to see, and it's speaking to them and showing them what they want. You know, in this this is an odd concept, but they don't really care what drawing you have going on this weekend, right? If that's what you're posting on your social media, they don't really. They got the flyer. They know what's going on. They want to see who's winning, how much is winning, what games are winning. That's what they want to see. That's the social aspect of it. Is, boy, that could be me, right? We post a lot of winners photos, and we've done a really good job with our slot department of getting those photos and engaging guests, making sure that you're answering their questions when they have questions, and you're writing them back and you're liking their comments and being responsive. I mean, social media is 24/7. So making sure you have a person or a team of people, in my instance, I have a couple of people who help monitor social media, that you're responding back to people in a timely manner. If it's sitting there for days on end, you've lost that person.
Oh yeah, especially with complaints. I agree with you. If there's some major complaint going on and there's a pattern and there's several people complaining and no one's monitoring, of course you're like losing it, right? So in the virtual space, the virtual casino world, are you allowing people to? It's online gaming isn't legal in Michigan yet, but you know, in the next couple of years, I guess there's going to be 22 more states that are going to legalize it. I saw the G2E show. So is Michigan one of those states? I don't remember if Michigan was one of them.
We got it on the ballot this November. It should be on the ballot this November. So we're gearing up and getting ready for that.
Excellent.
You know, and again, it's finding the value. It goes back to you need to have that value.
Yeah.
And the while they're not on property, you can still provide that guest experience by, you know, finding the right partner who's going
right.
to be able to support you and your business needs. It's going to be, you know, when there are issues, because you know, inevitably there's always going to be issues that you're quick to respond, you're quick to resolve, and you know, don't get into the blame game of, well, it was their third party vendor, or it was this person. Well, you didn't do this in time. I mean, at the end of the day, take
right.
care of the guest. You know, point fingers later. Take
yeah.
care of
yeah.
the guest. Make sure they're happy, and then figure out what happened.
Ultimately,
yeah,
yeah, I agree. Let's fast forward real quick to online gaming being legal in Michigan, which is eventually going to happen, I think, in all over the country. But do you think that
when people earn, when they play virtual casino at Gun Lake, and they earn their points and rewards online, is that an easy transition for you? Do you think to allow people to redeem their points and rewards for, you know, whatever, cash or comps at your property?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, it goes back to that value. You know, am I getting my value for my time played? Whether it's on property or off property, I think you're going to have to be able to provide them some sort of value. If I spend $10,000 in a virtual casino, what am I going to get out of that? Invite them to the property. And then what you're going to do over time is you will be able to start, you know, especially those younger generations, you'll get them exposed to the casino, and they'll start navigating probably away from the social, and, you know, start migrating into the building. Right.
Exactly.
And I think having the right partner that has the same games, right? You got the game on property, you got the game on the virtual casino, and being able to partner up and have those promotions and utilize your analytic team to say, who's playing game A on the virtual casino? Let's invite them to the property to play game A in real life.
Right. Okay, good.
Right.
I'm glad to hear that because I was just wondering if the virtual casino, you know, easily, slowly transitions over into the brick and mortar gaming. And in many cases, I agree with you. I just think that
some places aren't offering virtual casino points and rewards to be transferred into real comps and rewards, and it doesn't kind of make sense to me. Why not? Because they've already earned points and rewards.
Yeah, there's a lot of jurisdiction issues. Yeah, you got to be careful. There's a lot of jurisdiction issues that, you know, once you start providing something, you know, is that considered, are they actually gaming now? So you've got to be familiar with your state laws and your compacts and all that stuff to make sure you're not crossing any lines.
True. Okay.
But yeah. There's definitely.
Yeah.
You definitely got to provide something.
Right.
Other than just spend your money and leave. You know, we do stuff where, you know, we invite players in to for a free buffet or, you know, whatever the case may be. It's you got to be careful with what your regulations state.
Okay. Understood. Very good. That's a good point. Okay.
Well. Yep. Good luck to you. You're doing great and. We're happy to hear that you're, you know, got this new culture of happiness going on over there. I love that.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thanks,
you're
Luigi.
Welcome.
Really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Bye-bye. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Carter Pavey. Do you have a question for him?
Good evening. How are you guys doing?
Good evening. Very well, thank you.
Outstanding. Well, I enjoy these so much, and I enjoy what I'm hearing tonight, because I've always been a believer in organization that hire the best, and if they're better than you, I'm in Wisconsin, so you hire Aaron Rodgers, and even I could coach decently, I think. But what I'm wondering about, I built my life out of what I call naive enthusiasm, which put me into rooms that I just walked in, and then I had to kind of save my life to get through. But I also feel a vibe right now, and I want to ask on this, what do you do to relax and deprogram? Because you have a really, I always joke that your mind is the hard drive, and your hard drive is pretty darn full. and yeah, you're going at it.
Up until, you know, I have a 9-month-old daughter right now, so she's my unwind. I come home and I mean, when she's awake, she's my world. My wife, you know, her and I are we enjoy drinking wine and all that stuff. But my wife and my daughter are and I'll tell you, it's hard. It is hard. I mean, there's times where my wife's like, "You just got home. Can you put your phone down?" I'm like, "Yeah, and I'm just trying to finish." Nope, you're right. I need to stop. And so it's hard to find that balance, especially in an industry like ours when we're 24/7. But my wife and my daughter, I mean, they're my entertainment. You know, whether it's going for a walk around the neighborhood or trying a new restaurant, it's, you know, hanging out with them is my time to unwind. But it is challenging. I can't say that I'm perfect at it, because there are times where, you know, I've got one more email, or I've got to finish this report, or I got this presentation I got to do, or I got this phone call from, you know, this guest stop that's happening. So it's trying to balance that as much as you can. But it's tough. I mean, I'll admit it 100%. It's tough.
And I think that over time, that's probably gotten tougher in the last 15 years. It's because everybody's into immediate response. And if you don't answer immediately, they think that, you know, you've lost touch with gravity or something.
Yeah, and what we've done with my team is we've done with my director team, and we've done this, we did this a few years ago. We instilled a kind of parameters, right? And the parameters are the expectation from us as a team of directors, as an executive team, is, you know, respond to an email within 4 hours up until 9 o'clock at night. At 9 o'clock at night, if we send you an email, don't respond until the next day. But you know, it's kind of setting those boundaries as a team, and then make sure you hold each other accountable. You know, I've always struggled with the work-life balance. I think with the birth of my daughter, it's, while I'm not perfect, and my wife would probably say I'm far from perfect, but it's finding that I feel like with the birth of my daughter, I've gotten a little bit better at finding that balance, and making sure that I'm there for them, a present. You know, I try my hardest to leave at a certain time, so I can come spend 2 or 3 hours with my daughter before she goes to bed for the night. And then my wife and I will hang out, and, you know, when she gets tired and goes to bed, there will be times where I'll say, all right, I'm going to stay up for another hour or so and work a little bit more. But it's tough in this industry. It really is.
Well, again, you're in a way of life, not a job. And I agree. And that's what I always wonder. I deeply respect and admire your passion and commitment and knowledge. You've achieved great success at this. And it's just awesome to be able to get on and listen to your thoughts and how you're doing it. So thank you so much for sharing, and bless you for the baby.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you so much. You have a good night.
Will do.
Yeah, children will definitely change you. That's for sure. Change me.
Absolutely.
That's the one force you can't combat. That's for sure. This is GT Radio, Tino Magnetta. I have Carter Pavey on the line. You have a question for him?
Hi, Tino. This is Bobby in Las Vegas. Hello, Carter.
Bobby, how are you?
Hello.
Good, good. I think the Price is Right's loss was the gaming industry's gain, Carter.
All right, I appreciate that.
That's great.
I love that story, and I love how you were so tenacious in getting the job. Kind of good to hear every once in a while. I was curious, you talked about how you like doing the promotions and being on the mic. Did you have any terrific promotion that you recall, or disasters, or do you still get on the mic?
I still get on the mic, absolutely. My team still has to tell me, like, all right, can we do our job now? Can you get off the mic? Because I still get up there and I still do it. I think one of the – so we just kind of talked about
maybe that was the case.
Yeah. We just talked to an earlier caller about, you know, how the industry's changed and people want, you know, that immediate gratification and all that stuff. So one promotion that we've done over the last few years is we've taken back old school, where you get drawing entries, and you know, my team hates the promotion because it's so much work, but But they love it because it produces such great results. We do the manual tickets. We've got the big Bertha drum.
That's great.
We do the manual tickets for various things. And
I love
guests
it.
Guests really, really resonate well with that. Again, it's very labor intensive and it's tiring and it's exhausting, you know, especially because everyone waits to the end to collect all their manual tickets. But and by doing that, though, guests can physically see this is what I have. And they really, you know, they're more apt to believe that the computer is not rigged when they have the actual ticket in their hand, right? I'm not saying computers are rigged, obviously, but that's the perception that we have. The slot machine's rigged, the drawing's rigged, you know, the ATM is rigged, you name it, everything's rigged. But when you have the physical ticket, it really creates that sense of value to the player. So by doing that, and we've been able to engage all aspects of the property, you know, buy two buffets and get a ticket, have a $50 dinner in our cafe, get a ticket. Go buy, you know, something for at the gift shop and have a $50 bill in the gift shop, get a ticket. Experience this in our entertainment lounge, get a ticket. So we're able to kind of navigate and expose the guests throughout the property and introduce them to things that they may not be familiar with by giving them a ticket. And then you win a jackpot, get a ticket. Win a jackpot in our high limits, get a ticket. If you're this tier, you'll get a ticket on Tuesday. If you're this tier, get a ticket on Wednesday. If you're this tier, get a ticket on Thursday. We'll have drawings for the electronic drawings for tickets. I mean, we really create it so that the ticket is what you really – I mean, that's – you know, we'll give you a small little, you know, cash prize or free spot play prize, but you want that ticket because at the end of the day, that ticket is going to be – or at the end of the month, I should say, that ticket's worth $100,000. We do a drawing where one person wins $100,000.
Wow.
Every year we've done this promotion. Every year we've done this promotion, we've set a new record. I mean, the day we do that $100,000 drawing, we're busier than New Year's Eve.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's
probably the best drawing that I've ever done. I would say the worst drawing is, you know, we were doing a drawing, and I can't remember the specifics of the drawing, but the computer crashed, and it messed up the drawing, and it was frozen, and, you know, it took, I think, 45 minutes, 50 minutes to get everything back up and running. Meanwhile, another drawing was supposed to have started by now, so I had to do two or three drawings back-to-back to get everything caught up, and people were not happy.
How many tickets were in that big Bertha drum when you gave away 100 grand that time?
There was a lot. I would say there was probably over 100,000.
Wow,
that's unbelievable.
You can imagine that. You know, people at your players club are like, "I hate you," because you have to write them all by hand, and you know, I hate you. Why are we doing this? But they see the fruits of the labor. And you know, I share to a certain extent, I share the how the day did and how the day performed and, you know, to the frontline team members. And that really invigorates them so that next time you do it, they're really engaged and excited because they're saying, all right, well, now we're invested. We know what we did last time. How do we beat that this time?
Well, that's great. Tino, another great show. Thanks so much. And thank you, Carter.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much. So while we were talking to Bobby, one of your friends and one of my dear friends who has texted me and said that you are the absolute best. Her name's Lauren Westerfield. She apologized for not being on the show. And she says, I miss my station's crew, the Young Bucks running marketing, she says.
There was Young Bucks.
Yeah. And she's great. And I didn't even know that you knew her. She's a very dear friend. And I see now why we click too. So this is great. Now her question is, what's the key difference in operating a regional property in Michigan versus the Vegas market?
You know, the key difference is it's really in Vegas. I mean, again, casinos are a dime a dozen. They would drive up and you have properties, you know, around the corner. And but here you've got to create a reason for people to come because it's not a short drive. You know, there's a lot of other, especially in Michigan, we have a very small window of good weather where people want to be outside. So it's being able to compete against, you know, that. I mean, really, that's our biggest competitor at the end of the day. It's not the casino that's an hour, hour and a half away. It's the weather. But it's taken a lot of those lessons that I learned in Las Vegas where it was extremely competitive and applying them here maybe it's not as a competitive of a market, but utilizing, though, that competitive nature against yourself. And again, I'm a firm believer of, you know, at the end of the day, the biggest competitor is your own property. And so taking those lessons of, you know, being competitive and applying it to everyday business is the main difference. But I mean, similarities, I mean, it's a casino runs when the casino runs, but it's really applying how do you do better and how do you beat yourself? And utilizing those lessons is very similar. I mean, the guest service is the guest service, right? And you should be learning that at any
yeah.
place where you're at.
Yeah. Great. Okay, we have time for one more question. Let me patch this in. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta from GT Radio. I have Carter Pavey. Do you have a question for him?
Hey, guys. Michael Glauser from Catalyst Marketing. Thanks for having me.
Hey,
Carter,
Michael.
Pleasure to meet you. Doing great. Staying warm here in California.
Great.
Which, there's a couple that are funny. A couple things, very similar things have happened over our career with promotion, so some funny stories to hear and could certainly relate to a lot of them. Tino, you might not even know this, is why I ended up moving to Vegas, was a similar kind of decision process, if you buy that. I was supposed to go out with a girl one night. She blew me off to go out with a friend of mine. I decided after a couple of cocktails that night it was time to get out of Atlantic City. So
didn't know that.
So, yeah, so similar.
That's great. Great
similar
story.
That the ball got rolling. But that question for you is up in your neck of the woods, I guess besides the weather, what's the biggest challenge that you face as a marketer up in that area?
I think it's with it doesn't matter what market. The biggest challenge is how do you get one more trip? How do you get one more dollar from the player? And I don't care if you're in Las Vegas or you're in Atlantic City or you're in Mississippi or Michigan. It doesn't matter. That's always the biggest challenge is how do you get just one more, right? One more hour, one more trip, one more dollar from the player. And you got to try. It's a lot of trial and error. There's some things that work. There's some things that don't. And what worked today doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow. So it's always it's being innovative and thinking outside of the box, thinking outside of the norm, so to speak, the industry norm, and doing things unique and different and learning from those. And be willing to, even if it failed today, be willing to try it again, maybe make some modifications, but try it again tomorrow, so to speak, and in hopes that it will work a little bit. But I think that's the challenge with any property, regardless of where you're located. It's how do you get just one more?
Certainly appreciate that. What one more if you got time, Kino.
Yeah,
is
absolutely.
Is there something in your – yeah, Carter, is there something in your current role, a project or, you know, something you've done since you've been in your current role that you're most proud of?
My current role is I just got promoted about a month ago to AGM. But, I think I've been at the property since it was a concrete slab. I was the very first person hired for the project. So to me, the biggest thing that I'm most proud of is the casino. We've gone through three expansions in the last 8 years. To me, that's my baby. Watching that property to where it is now is my baby. And I think the thing I'm most excited for in my new role is really working with the various departments that report to me, working with them and working more importantly with their frontline team and continuing to develop those frontline team members and that mid-level management to really kind of embrace my philosophies and get them going. I think I've done a great job with the marketing team that I was responsible for, but now it's working with these other departments and really getting them to buy in and to live and breathe the same philosophies that I'm known for at the property.
Yeah, that's good. Well, much success in your role. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Carter, this has been fantastic. There's a lot more calls, but we've run out of time. I really appreciate it, and definitely want to have you back on the show at some point. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to be. Yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Right, and I guess you'll be hanging with your little baby now, right? And your
she
wife.
She's already went to bed. I'm going to go down and have a glass of wine with the wife.
and unwind. That's good, buddy. Okay, thanks so much, and we'll be talking soon. Good luck to you.
All right, thanks, Tina. All right.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow, that was fantastic. So many great stories, great callers, and definitely Carter is a character. Thursday, I have a great show. Louisa Woods from Delaware North, and Louisa's a little different than, well, all our callers, all our interviewers are different, all our callers are different, but, you know, the people that we have on the show, they have a variety of stories, and Louisa has a very unique one. She did not start at a casino. She started in the online world, and she spent many years as a pioneer in the online world, and now she's at a bricks and mortar company who was an online analyst too. So Thursday, 5:30 to 6:30 Pacific Standard Time, Louisa Woods, please join us. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen to it. Have a good night, and we'll see you on Thursday. Ciao.